morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time it is, wherever you are when you are listening, welcome to the Monsters and Friends podcast. This is a podcast dedicated to the cryptids, legends, and lore that don't get the same kind of exposure as their rock star counterparts like Bigfoot and the Mothman. I am your faithful servant and host, Michael Patrick, and I want to thank you for stopping by and visiting my little slice of heaven here at the Monsters and Friends podcast. To say that things are getting exciting is nothing less than an understatement at this point. When I started this podcast 8 months ago, I was just excited to be able to share my love of monsters, legends, and lore with the world and figured, you know what, if I had about 20 people to listen and was able to put out a show once a month, that I would be set. Well, much like I said a few months back, we are right on the cusp of another pretty fantastic milestone. We are about to hit 2,000 total downloads and nearly 3,000 total listens, so thank you all for allowing me to ramble and rant about all things weird. On top of that, I am super excited to announce that I've become a member of the Straight Up Strange podcast family, and there are a bunch of really amazing podcasts on there. If you get a chance, make sure to head on over to straightupstrange.com and check out the lineup of amazing shows that they have. There is more really exciting stuff coming out the pipe in the future, but you know what, for now, let's throw another log on the old fire there and jump into this week's episode. Last week, we spent some time in the Tar Heel State of North Carolina. We visited the Devil's Tramping Ground, hunted the woods with the Beast of Bladenboro, and dove into Lake Norman to try and catch Normie, the Lake Norman lake monster. It's a lot of lakes. If you haven't listened to last week's episode, make sure to check it out wherever you get your podcasts, but don't dawdle around too much. This week, we've hit the open road yet again. We've turned old Winnie north, heading up to the Great White North itself. We're not quite heading as far north as Canada, but this week on the Monsters and Friends podcast, we're heading right up Route 31 into the great state of Michigan. So far on this pod, we've touched a little bit about the Wolverine State. Back in December, we talked a little bit about the Melonheads that live in the woods near the Felt Mansion in Lake Town Township. They're a group of children with hydrocephalus that were put in this insane asylum. Well, eventually they were released into the wild and took up residence in an old, dilapidated mansion. To find out more, though, feel free to go ahead and check out episode 6 of the first season. As for what we're going to be exploring right now, let's dive right in and see what we can scrounge up. Okay, you know what? I'm sorry. I dad-joked my way right into an introduction to Michigan's first cryptid, which, yes, of course, is a lake monster. This isn't just your prototypical lake monster. Imagine this really quick. You're out on a lake with your buddies for the day, trying to bring home a nice catch for dinner. You notice an area that seems like it has some stumps and snags and other areas where fish may be hanging out in the relative safety and security of their underwater universe. Little do they know, you and your buddies are on the way to make their day end up on a plate. Right when you troll on over to the stump, something crazy happens. The stump opens its eyes. What? Serious, that's right. You heard me. The log looks back at you because, you know what? It's not a log. This is the Leelanau Lake Monster. I can tell what you're thinking, though. Really, Mike? Another lake monster named after the body of water that it inhabits? Come on now, seriously? You know what? For the sake of this podcast and maybe even moving forward, we're going to rename this lake monster. That's right, we are. I think a suitable name for it, especially in lieu of the local river that's credited with helping this creature's first appearance, we're going to name this fella Leland. Leland is quite an interesting character. Most lake monsters fall nicely into one of two categories. They're either in the Nessie Champ category, where they're most generally presented as some sort of plesiosaur. They're described as a dinosaur that has a round body, flippers or stubby legs, and a long neck with a head perched nicely atop. They're basically what happens after grown-up Littlefoot and Flipper have a bit too much fermented fish and get a little too close. The other kind of lake monster that we generally see is the sea serpent kind. This is the kind of lake monster that Ogopogo best represents. It's the long, snake-like lake monster that's somewhere between 40 and 50 feet long, and it's the kind that you'd see on the old maps of the oceans from when Jack Sparrow was looking for that, you know, little compass thing. Those are generally the two most common types of lake monsters that we're all used to seeing, right? Well, have no fear. Leave it to Michigan to make it weird and introduce something completely different. What if I told you that there was a lake monster out there that has actually adapted to its surroundings? You'd probably say, whoa, no way. Well, yes way. Leland ain't no cookie cutter lake monster. This monster has adapted to its surroundings and apparently has used camouflage to survive for quite some time. You know, OMG, I'm sorry y'all. I did it again. This is becoming a habit. Before we talk about Leland and what he does or how he first got noticed, let's talk about the where of it. It's pretty important to this tale. So obviously, Leland calls Michigan home. More specifically, Leland lives up near Traverse City in Leland Township. And no, it's not named after the monster, although it probably should have been. If you're not familiar with Michigan, have no fear. I want you to hold up your left hand, put your four fingers together, stick your thumb out a little bit, and guess what? It's Michigan. At the top of your pinky on that left hand is Traverse City, so it's up there pretty far. Now that you know where we're talking about, mostly, let's figure out a bit about the Lake Leenalau. This area is actually pretty much two separate lakes. There's a North Lake and a South Lake, and so it's original, I know. There's a small river named the Leland River, and this river connects Lake Leenalau with Lake Michigan. In 1854, a dam was built on the Leland River to help provide power to the Leland sawmill. This caused the water in the lake to raise about 10 to 12 feet, which caused a pretty large portion of the land around the lake to turn into a marshy, almost swamp-like environment. Not only did it cause the water levels to rise, but it also closed off the largest entrance and exit to the larger Lake Michigan from the smaller Lake Leenalau. It's believed that this creature was effectively trapped at this point and made its way to the marshes of Lake Leenalau. Throughout the years, there have been quite a number of sightings of Leland, but there aren't many that are as descriptive as a specific one that happened in 1910. A young man named William Gaither had a run-in with the creature while fishing for perch. He was doing more wading than fishing, so he decided to switch places up a little bit. He found some dead cedar trees and figured that would be a good spot where fish would probably be. He found a branch to tie the boat to in order to prevent the boat from floating too much, but the branch weren't no branch. Once young William tossed the rope on his branch, the branch's eyes opened. You heard me, the branch had eyes that opened up. This wasn't a branch at all, and poor Will Gaither stood there completely frozen while this thing stared back at him before retreating under the boat. Gaither said that the creature was so large that its tail still stuck out of the water while its head passed under the front of the boat. Let that sink in for a minute here. William Gaither was literally inches away from this creature and had no idea that it wasn't just a tree. It camouflaged itself so good that he couldn't tell what it was. Yeah, for me, that's a tall order of nope. This is the most descriptive account that exists of any encounter with this creature. There have been a handful of experiences quite similar to what young William Gaither experienced, but no one has wanted to label themselves as quote-unquote crazy, so there aren't too many that make this public record. Gaither's great-grandson stands by what great-grandpop saw and said that it left its mark on the poor unfortunate man. But what is it? Well, there's not a whole lot of debate about Leland. He's not a monster that's talked about often, if at all. There actually hasn't been any recorded sightings of Leland in quite a long time. That doesn't tell us a whole lot, though. Much like a stick bug, it appears as if Leland utilizes his ability to blend into his surroundings much more than a Nessie or a Champ might. A lot of folks believe that once this dam was constructed, Leland actually ended up getting trapped Lake Linalau, and after a few decades roaming the waters, he since passed on. No one really knows what Leland is or what he was, but the biggest question is if Leland is in fact in the big lake in the sky, or if, while out on the lake, when paddling around the cedar stumps, you're actually paddling along somewhere nearby is a living, breathing lake monster. Did you know that there's a new Godzilla movie coming out pretty soon? I believe it's called Godzilla King of the Monsters. One of Godzilla's biggest enemies was a villain named Mothra. Well, it started out as an enemy, but now they're like best buds fighting together. I don't really remember. It's been a while. What if I told you that there might be a real-life Mothra versus Godzilla that exists in Michigan? Well, around Michigan. For a moment, think of the Thunderbird. In our story, the Thunderbird plays the part of Mothra, a flying, evil, flying thing. Now, the part of Godzilla, well, that's being played by a creature that calls the water its home in the same vein that our hero Godzilla does. This monster goes by the name of Mishapichu, or the Water Panther. The Mishapichu lives in the weird gray area between lore and reality. Mishapichu lives mostly through Native American lore, but there are definitely those that argue that it legitimately stalks our world in reality. The Mishapichu is a pretty scary creature that you definitely do not want to cross. The Mishapichu is described as having the head and body of a cat. Generally speaking, the two most common felines it's described as looking like are either a lynx or a panther, depending on which version you're hearing. But unlike most cats, it has a few other terrifying additions. Firstly, it's got some horns, and we're not talking about like little pronghorn horns either. We're talking full-on horns made of copper. Why copper, you ask? Well, hold on to that. We'll get to that in just a minute. Also, the variations of the horns on this guy vary from story to story. I've seen mentioned that the horns are like that of a great ram and twist and turn, yet others I've seen describe them as more of being like a deer's antlers. In some versions of the story, the Mishapichu sports some gnarly scales on its back and bird feathers, but much like Bigfoot, a lot of encounters have a lot of the same characteristics, but the specifics can change up a little bit depending on the person and their interaction with the creature. Another very unique feature of Mishapichu is that it has an extraordinary tail. How, you ask? Well, let me tell you. It's really, really long. Pretty crazy. In fact, it is so long that it wraps around its body up near its head. A French Jesuit missionary named Jacques Marquette came across a depiction of the creature and described it as such. While skirting some rocks, which by their height and length inspire awe, we saw upon one of them two painted monsters which at first made us afraid, and upon which the boldest savages dare not long rest their eyes. They are as large as a calf. They have horns on their heads like those of a deer, a horrible look, red eyes, a beard like a tiger's, a face somewhat like a man's, a body covered with scales, and so long a tail that it winds all around the body, passing above the head and going back between the legs, ending in a fish's tail. Alright, so let's do the whole, like, put yourself in a certain place thing, okay? So, in the 1600s, right, you're traveling around some weird foreign lakes that you've never really experienced before. You see this depiction of something, and you have no idea if it's real or just some sort of crazy story told by the locals. I mean, we've seen giant skeletons and dried up stingrays that look like demons, so is this so far-fetched? And to top it all off, Mishapishu, according to Native American lore, is also a shapeshifter. I can't even imagine what sailors and explorers would think when they hear all this. Of course it sounds ludicrous, but is it really? Well, what is Machu Picchu's purpose? Firstly, it calls Lake Superior home, so luckily those of you Michiganders on the mainland, you don't have to worry a whole lot. Now, if you're a Youper, then you've got some worrying to do. Machu Picchu is believed to be the guardian of all the copper that's spread out through the Great Lakes region, but it mostly resides in a small island north in Lake Superior near Canada called Michipicoten Island. Sorry if I'm butchering all that, but while not super close to the UP, Machu Picchu controls a lot more than you might think. It's believed that if you remove any copper from the region, like anywhere in the Great Lakes region, Machu Picchu is going to find you and open up a can of whoop on your Rudy Poo candy. Well, yeah. And when I say open that can as well, I'm serious. The great overlord of the water can create some serious havoc on the lakes. During the midst of the 19th century, copper mining was kind of the in thing. Unfortunately, for a lot of those with big aspirations up in the Great Lakes region, they never got to see the fruits of their labor. While sailing home and transporting the copper, very large storms would suddenly blow up on Lake Superior and claim these ships for its own. Many believe that this was Machu Picchu enforcing its will on those that had the audacity to remove its copper from the region. On November 7, 1885, Machu Picchu played enforcer to a large group of men. There was a ship carrying UP copper on board when a giant snowstorm blew in. A ship named the Algoma struck some shallows after being blown around and broke into two pieces. 46 of the 60 people on board perished, and Machu Picchu delivered a very emphatic message to those that dare steal its copper. Maybe this was just a snowstorm or some bad luck, but maybe it wasn't. The locals surely didn't believe in bad luck. They believed in Machu Picchu. Some men tempted fate to defy this. More specifically, they were four Native American men that actually went to the island of Michipicoten to take copper directly from the Machu Picchu's home. They wanted to use this to be able to heat food and water back at their village, but they didn't ask permission of the underwater panther or offer up anything in return. The moment that their canoes left the island, it said that they heard eerie voices all around them, and that soon the water panther charged the men, and it attacked them with extreme prejudice. He tore them apart with the exception of one man that he allowed to live. He wanted him to return to the village to show what happens if you steal from the underwater panther's children. The man made it back to the village and he told them of what happened, but he soon succumbed to his injuries and died. With the exception of a few, the tribes around the Great Lakes knew better than to tempt the great underwater panther. If someone needed copper or wanted to use some for any reason, they'd make various offerings to Machu Picchu and wait for a sign that it was okay. If any of the locals needed to travel out on the lake, they would actually make an offering up to Machu Picchu in hopes that he would grant them safe passage and give them clear weather out on their travels. That brings up the question, obviously, of what the heck is the underwater panther? Most probably believe that this is simply some sort of Native American folklore told to keep kids away from creating sorts of mischief. But of course, this isn't called the Rational Explanations and Friends podcast. We're all about monsters here outside, old Winnie. I also imagine that a lot of these myths and lore probably derive from somewhere. Is there really a giant underwater panther that beefs with the Thunderbirds of the world? Possibly. Or perhaps it's just a story. Either way, if you decide to tempt fate and head to Michipicoten Island to steal from Machu Picchu, let us know first so that we can keep an eye on you and track where you've been. And finally, this morning, afternoon, evening, we're going to go ahead and take a trip east. Southeast, to be exact. Okay, time to do the glove thing again, all right? Hold up your left hand and look at the back. Put your fingers together. Move your thumb out a bit. Nope. Tiny bit more. Okay, perfect. Right at the base of your thumb, right about where your knuckle is, sits the Motor City. For the last monster, we're heading to Detroit. We all know the story of Mothman, right? We know how it's reportedly that Mothman is seen right before some terrible thing happens in an area. Well, the Mothman isn't the only harbinger of doom that's known to predict some sort of terrible thing that's about to happen. Or perhaps the Nain Rouge is the one that causes it in this case. That's right, we're going to talk about the Nain Rouge, or the Red Dwarf. To begin, let's start off with the Cliff's Notes of the legend and how the Nain Rouge became so prevalent in Michigan history. In 1701, French explorer Antoine de la Mothe Cadillac brought about 100 settlers down along the Detroit River. They decided that this would be a great place for a settlement, and they began to construct their fort there. However, this wasn't the first time that Cadillac thought of how he might strike fortune with a new colony. Earlier in 1701, there was a big bash being held for Cadillac as he decided to head to find new territory. During this party, a woman with a cat on her shoulder showed up. Sounds like a good time, and like you'd imagine, they let her in, and immediately she began reading their palms. The dudes were amazed. Finally, she came to Cadillac and took his hand. She told him that he was going to start a great city, and he knew exactly what she was talking about. Pretty soon, the awesomeness that he had in his brain turned into a total bummer. She said that the city would face bloodshed, strife, and other awful not-so-good things. She told Cadillac, though, that he could turn this, and all he had to do would be to appease the Nain Rouge and not offend him. Well, Cadillac, being the Richard that he is, said no thanks, and he took off to head home before his long journey down the river. Fast forward to years later, after Detroit was set up and prospering, he and his wife were wandering the streets one night. They ran into some guys chatting about how terrible things were getting, and one of them mentioned the Nain Rouge. His wife freaked out a little bit, and being the cool guy he was, he said, "Don't worry about it," and he just brushed it off. While walking home that night, though, they encountered a gross-looking dwarf-like figure. Cadillac took out his walking stick and he smacked it, and he said, "Get away." The little dwarf took off, laughing maniacally. Cadillac was warned, but guess what? He didn't listen. Pretty soon after that, Cadillac's luck took quite a turn. First, he was kicked out of Detroit for trafficking booze and furs. Then, he was named governor of Louisiana, but ended up being removed from office there, too. He lost almost all of his fortune, and he died a pretty poor man, leaving nothing to his kids like he thought he would. Was it bad luck, or was it something far worse? What is the Nain Rouge, though? Mary Caroline Watson Hamlin described it as very red in the face, with a bright, glistening eye. Instead of burning, it froze. Instead of possessing, depth emitted a cold gleam like the reflection from a polished surface, bewildering and dazzling all who came within its focus. And with a grinning mouth displaying sharp, pointed teeth, completed his strange face. Some other descriptions have him described as a small creature covered in black or red fur with an old man's face, featuring blazing red eyes and rotten teeth. Obviously, this guy is quite a looker. Of course, there's also a lot of debate about what it looks like and what exactly it is. Some describe it as being like an evil red leprechaun that's just often unhappy. There's a fair bit of description of the creature, as well as a couple of different explanations. But a lot of folks do believe that this is some sort of harbinger of doom. So let's run down quickly some of the times that this little fella has been seen. Of course, we have his run-in with Cadillac that made everything awful for that poor guy. Next up was July 30th, 1763. The next day, 58 British soldiers ended up dead after they were ambushed by warriors from Chief Pontiac's Ottawa tribe. He was also seen in 1805, just a few days before quite a bit of the city of Detroit burned to the ground. He popped up again right before Fort Detroit got bombarded by the British and American forces had to surrender. Again, our good friend the Nain Rouge showed up in 1967 before the police raid that sparked the race riots, and another time in 1977 when a Detroit Edison lineman said that he saw the creature shimmy up a pole before leaping down. The next day, a historic ice storm hit and left roughly 400,000 people without power. This fella is quite a bit busier than his Mothman counterpart. He's created quite a bit of havoc throughout the Detroit area. Again, what is it? Who really knows? A harbinger of doom? Or maybe he's a mischievous little creature that tries to warn against terrible things before they're happening. Today, the city of Detroit deals with the little fellow themselves as they hold the Marche du Nain Rouge. It's a celebration of, or perhaps a warning to, the Nain Rouge, but both with the same kind of meaning. Whether it's an offering or a warning to the fella, Detroit is growing and starting again to prosper. Today, the city of Detroit deals with this little fellow themselves as they hold the Marche du Nain Rouge. It's a celebration of, or perhaps a warning to, the Nain Rouge, but both kind of have the same purpose. Whether this celebration is an offering to or a warning against the fella, we don't really know. We do know that Detroit is growing and starting to again prosper. Is it a coincidence that the Nain Rouge hasn't been spotted recently and parts of the city are thriving? Maybe. Maybe not. And you know, there have been some recent reports about the Nain Rouge, but they're super vague. Still, there are some parts of the city that aren't really thriving, so maybe the Nain Rouge visits those areas more often than others. Whatever the case, if you're wandering through Detroit and you see a small man-like thing that's red or wearing all red, or black or furry or just evil-looking, just don't offend it. Give it a wave or a nod and maybe give it a sandwich, I don't know. I mean, who doesn't love a good BLT? Regardless, if you're wandering through Detroit or out on Lake Superior, or if you're hanging out near Lake Leenalau, be careful and make sure you check your surroundings. These three things are really just the tip of the iceberg for Michigan. There's a lot of other cryptids, legends, and lore that circulate all around the mid-state. One thing I can say, though, is that it is undoubtedly a very interesting place. Make sure you check out the website at monstersandfriends.wordpress.com to see some of the other legends that Michigan has to offer. There's a few that I'll go ahead and post on there that didn't make the cut for the show. But it's that time again, ladies and germs. It's time to put out the fire, head into the Winnie, and move along to the next stop. I wanted to thank you all so much for coming and hanging out with us. Please make sure to give us a follow on the Twitter machine at MNFPod. Look for us on Instagram at Monsters and Friends. Or if your mom still uses Facebook, tell her to give us a like. All you have to do is search Monsters and Friends on there and voila, there we are. Finally, make sure you subscribe to At Strange Podcast and check out the lineup there. There are a lot of really awesome shows that deal with everything strange and a little bit creepy and weird. While you're doing all this, and if you're bored, give us a rating and review as well, but the most important thing that you can do is subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Big Sal's Podcast Emporium, Google, wherever you get it, hit that subscribe button and make my day. Thank you all so much. You guys know that I love you, Barry loves you, and as always, thanks for stopping by, and we'll chat again real soon.